Cyber 24 is presented by our friends at Valcom. Valcom is a Utah-based IT solutions and services provider with a drive for getting IT right. From ironclad security to computing and beyond, Valcom's 35-plus years means they have the experience and the expertise to help your business from desktop to the data center. Check them out at vlcm.com. And welcome to the Cyber 24 podcast, the weekly pod dedicated to helping business and governmental leaders like yourselves better understand the often intimidating topic of cybersecurity so you can make better decisions for your organization. My name is Marty Carpenter of 24/9. I work in strategic communication, public affairs, and government relations. This week, seniors are reluctant to adopt new tech. I don't think that's a secret for anyone. And when they do, they can be easy targets for cyber criminals. In this episode of Cyber 24, we sit down with cybersecurity expert and best-selling author Scott Schober to discuss how seniors can stay safe online. All right, welcome into the Cyber 24 podcast. Our guest today is Scott Schober from Berkeley Veritronic Systems, or BVS. Scott, thanks so much for taking some time to be with us today.
Yeah, great to be here with you.
If the name seems familiar to some in our audience, it's because you're a prolific author. You've knocked out a couple books, which always seems like such an intimidating task to go to actually put down all of your thoughts and organize them and then sit down and actually write them into a book. So can look up Scott and see some of the works that he's put together. We're going to talk about a little bit of them, some of them as we go through our conversation today. Scott, why don't you start by just giving a more thorough introduction to our audience than what I just gave, a little bit about yourself and your business, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, again, I'm running the company Berkeley Veritronic Systems and president CEO. I've been probably doing that for about 20 years. It's actually a family business, which is kind of unique in this industry of technology, wireless, and cybersecurity. We were founded 50 years ago, and obviously we didn't do cyber stuff back then. We did more things tied in with what people watch on TV and other types of interesting niche designs, and it could be for companies like New York Times, Pepsi Cola, NASA, you name it, the whole gamut. We're really a hardcore design and engineering firm that does everything under the sun. We do complete product from, you know, idea concept to a product that ships out the door. And most of the stuff we do now is tied with security, because a fair amount of our development was wireless test tools that were used to build out the cellular networks back in the late 1980s, 90s up till now. As there's been a shift from second generation, third generation, we're now kind of fourth generation, shifting to the fifth generation 5G, which we all hear about on TV. We're the guys that build the test transmitters and receivers behind that. In the process of doing all these things, we really started to understand how cell phones work and where the vulnerabilities are in wireless and how cyber criminals can exploit wireless technologies to steal our money, to scam us, to hack into computer networks. So in the process of all that, I found myself constantly talking to different audiences at technical trade shows, giving presentations, writing blogs, answering questions constantly, to the point where I started sharing more and more tips just with the everyday person or business owners. How do you stay safe from cyber criminals? Well, the more I did this, what ended up happening is I kind of got a target on my back, and hackers started to actually go after me, as crazy as it sounds, both personally and my company. And it started out innocent. I had my credit card compromised personally, and then the debit card got compromised. And then ironically enough, both credit card and debit card in my company got compromised. And I was like, this is too coincidental to have this. And everything gets reissued. You go through the painful process that we all have when a card's compromised. But then I have my Twitter account hacked and taken over, and tweets are going out that were not from me. And I got concerned. And suddenly our website wasn't working right, and our online commerce and the shopping wouldn't work at all. We were getting repeated DDoS attacks, distributed denial of service, where junk, traffic is flooding our website, so we can't do any business. And many things like this, mischief was going on. And I said, something is not right. So one morning, I came into work, I logged onto the bank, and we had $65,000 stolen out of our checking account. Mm. Big mess. It became a federal investigation, paperwork, phone calls, letters, took a while. Finally, I got all the money back and got the house in order, as it were, and learned a ton of things that anybody could be hacked, even if you have good cybersecurity in place and you do the basic provisions. But I realized I wasn't doing enough, and I learned a ton of things. And eventually I was contacted and a story was done. I kind of went national about it, you know, having my business compromised and hacked, but yet I'm a cybersecurity expert. How could that happen?
Yeah.
And enough people heard the story and people started saying, you know, you really should write a book about this. This is kind of interesting how you were targeted, how you were hacked, what you learned, and what you're teaching people. And hence I said, well, I can't write a book because I don't know how to write. I'm not a writer, really. I could do a blog or do that type of stuff. But so I had to learn how to actually write a book. It took 2 years to actually author my first book. I did get some help. My brother, who is a good writer, and he was helping me edit it and kind of bouncing ideas off of him. But painful process, long process, and I learned a ton of things, what to do and probably more importantly, what not to do when you're writing a book. I learned how to be a self-published author and get it listed on Amazon and get into the Barnes and Nobles and into all the libraries and so on and so forth. So it was probably more of a huge learning curve for me. And I guess it was just something I was challenged to do and everybody asked to do it. So I said, okay, I'll do it. And I kind of enjoyed it afterwards, looking back, not during the process. It was painful.
Sounds like pregnancy in that way, right?
It's over, it was great. You don't remember all the pain, but there were a lot of long weekends and holidays and stuff that I would just sit there and write for hours on hours. And I learned much of what you write gets tossed and you don't necessarily use because you have to really stick to your thesis and stick to the story. And I tend to be too wordy and write too much. So I've learned, and when I went to the book number two, I was able to bring that down to probably more like 9 months instead of 2 years. Mm-hmm. And it was more content, more focused content, maybe a little bit more technical even, but I knew the audience better and I was more focused. And I think that helps understanding your target audience, writing to them. If you can tell it in stories, it's more enjoyable, hopefully, when you're reading a book, as opposed to just throwing facts out there and things that turn people off. So you start to become a storyteller and helps people relate. And I think that also increased as I was hired to speak publicly. You're speaking to an audience. You're giving a keynote for 40 minutes to an hour. You have to have that ability to weave in stories so people can relate. And at the same time, they can learn and take actionable items. So I've kind of learned that craft a little bit to the point where I started feeling more comfortable until I got to the point where I was having some challenges with elderly parents going through some health issues, but still using technology. My grandfather at the time, he was 99 years old, still active stock trader and his background. He worked at Bell Labs for 40 some years on the first satellites, the Telstar that went up into space. So very technical, yet was struggling with computers and passwords and logins and encryption and all that. So every weekend I'm spending helping my parents and my aged grandfather. I said, there's got to be an easier way. Is there a book? Is there a video? Something I could share with them so I'm not constantly doing this. And guess what? I didn't find really a whole lot of anything. The few things I found tended to speak down to the senior. It was a little disparaging and it didn't encourage them to use the internet or anything else. I said, this is ridiculous. I said, you know what? I'm going to change this. I'm going to write a book that's targeting seniors specifically. And if I can help that audience, I will feel good. And most people said, you're not going to make any money. It's going to be a lot of work. They told me I can't make a big font in a book. No one will buy a big font. It looks too childish. You know, the list went on and on. And I said, you know what? I disagree with everything everyone's saying. I am going to do it. Even if I don't sell it, at least I could follow through and do it. And I did it. And the surprising thing were the things that I stuck with and pushed the most, large fonts and, you know, nice like cartoon character images and things. Those are the things that seniors said they really like. And I said, okay, good. And I think that what helped me is I sat down and I talked to seniors. What helps you? And what do you need when you read a book and when you're using a computer and a smartphone? What bothers you? So I think really knowing your audience, learning about them is more important than maybe sometimes writing a book, sharing your story and educating them and encouraging them, but really understanding them, kind of getting in their shoes first. I think that's the number one thing that's important. Not just, I'm going to write a book and I got a story to tell and that's that. So I think for at least anybody that's listening into this, if you have a great story or you want to share something, take the time to learn your audience before you put pen to paper. and it will really pay off because you'll see the benefits coming back, not just in sales, but really the feedback on what they learned, what they appreciated. And that, at least at the end of the day, makes you feel good.
Yeah. I love the point you're making there, that you find that audience and a need that they have and then go satisfy it. When we launched the Cyber 24 podcast, you know, now 150 plus episodes into it, our initial idea was, this is an important topic that mm-hmm. most businesses and even government leaders look at and say, the IT guys have got it. Or their eyes would glaze over when you started to talk about it in any detail. And so our initial idea became, let's take something that's complex and intimidating. Let's try to strip it down and then go talk to this audience. And, you know, I think we found some success with it. 150 plus episodes in, that would indicate that.
I would say you did. That's great. Yeah. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. And same to you on the book. And I'm interested in this book that you've written about cybersecurity for seniors specifically. One, let's make sure we get the title out there so that we get it right. And then two, just kind of walk us through maybe some of those tips that came to the forefront that were most necessary to share, and anything about that maybe surprised you through the process that, I wouldn't have expected that this is something I would have needed to focus on, but I did, and it ended up being really important.
Yeah, sure. Well, the book is titled Senior Cyber, and again, it is targeting those that are elderly, although interestingly enough, I found a good part of the audience is those that are caregivers. So say you have an aged parent, a lot of people are buying the book, reading it and saying, wow, this was helpful to me. I'm giving it to a gift to my, you know, my father, my mother, my uncle, whatever, that's aged and frustrated using the computer, the internet, their smartphone, technology, so on and so forth. And so it's kind of interesting how it also bridges the gap. And what I've learned is it's important when you write a book that it teaches, but also it inspires conversation. And I've noticed that a caregiver suddenly is talking to their grandparent or their parent or whoever, and having that conversation about something I wrote in the book, and they share it back, or I'll get a funny picture. Sometimes they'll send me and like nice stories and things I hear as a result, which is really nice. Cause oftentimes, at least the first two books, yeah, you make the connections with people, obviously friends and family and, you know, business colleagues and stuff. But I think even more so, I got to hear some of the personal stories of people. And I've had situations where some individuals have purchased the book. They loved it. And maybe their parents in an assisted living. They said, guess what? I'm going to gift a copy to everybody in the assisted living because this was so helpful to my parent. And it makes you feel good when you hear that, because you know you're doing some things that are making difference. And as far as the tips and things, a lot of the stuff I try to share is against what you're often told. In other words, we hear about cybersecurity, and to your point earlier, most of the time you hear terms, what do you get in response? You look at someone, deer in the headlights, right?
Yeah.
Because they get it goes over their head, especially with somebody senior. If I just rattle off, you know, multi-factor authentication and, you know, use a good password manager and be careful of a DDoS attack. Usually by the second or third sentence, I'm tuned out already. They don't even listen to what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But if you slow down and explain, let's start at the basics and ask them a question. How do you handle passwords? Do you find they're hard to remember? What's a typical password you use? How long is it? Well, a 6-character password, you realize it could actually be guessed in about, you know, half a second with an automated tool that guesses passwords. Instead, if you create a password that's 12 characters long, that's very obscure, maybe numbers, letters, a couple symbols in there, uppercase, lowercase, it would take that same automated password guessing program 1,000 years to guess. Then they kind of clicks with them and say, so a really long obscure password is much more secure. Exactly. Now let's take it the next step. If it's that long, you can't remember it. Then you know it's secure usually. Let's talk about some ways that you could manage the passwords. You could write it down in a book and imply or build in layers of security by doing something with that book. Instead of leaving it on your desk, what do? Lock it in a safe, fire safe, lock it in your office, in your building, alarms. Layers of security protect those physical passwords. or you could learn about a password manager. And I'll usually take them down that path and just give them the basic education how a password manager works and why it keeps all of these passwords secure if they have a lot of them. And I'll typically share tips like the importance of not reusing the same password over multiple logins and share some statistics about that. And I think once you start sharing those tips, be it in the book that they read or if I'm presenting, it starts to sink in. And now their whole cyber hygiene is different. Before they do something, they think about it or they say, ooh, I read something about in the book. Let me go back to the third chapter. Let me reread this. Okay, he said, don't do this, but do this. Let me try it. And there I'm starting to effectuate change for somebody that's senior. And it's a guide they can go back to again and again and again if they have questions. And I think that's really important that you give them the power to understand how to make a change in their cybersecurity posture. And they do it and they feel more secure. They feel empowered in a sense to go on and do online banking now, where in the past they were paranoid because they didn't know what might happen. Mm-hmm. And same thing with scams and calls. I take them through a couple different scams that I've myself witnessed, that my grandfather's witnessed, actual screenshots so they can kind of see it and feel it and sense, is it a scam or is this legitimate? Who do you trust? What information should you divulge? Those type of very basic things. Again, I think it's more from an education and practical things where you could bounce it off of a trusted colleague and ask them, you know, I was reading a book, I heard this, and I should always check with somebody before I give out my social security number. What do you think? So those type of conversations happen as a result of when a senior reads the book.
Recent events have fundamentally changed the way we work. It's created new challenges for keeping employees connected, productive from home, and safe when they return to the office. To help bring organizations into this new normal of work, Aruba Networks has developed an AI-driven, intelligent cloud-managed networking platform that can help your business with secure business-class connectivity at home, staff safety management, and flexible financing options. With Aruba, you can have a safe and productive workplace for your employees. Learn more about Aruba's hybrid workplace-powered solutions with Valcom by visiting vlcm.com/edge. That's vlcm.com/edge. In an environment where IT staff struggles to keep up, most small to medium-sized businesses find themselves forced to react to security alerts rather than to proactively and preemptively manage threats and address potential vulnerabilities. HPE stands ready to help SMBs make the all-important switch from reactive, static, and siloed security tools and techniques to intelligent, adaptive security platforms that span the digital world. HPE's security solutions allow SMBs to close existing security gaps with coverage at the edge, in the cloud, and on-premises, all under a consistent and coherent security umbrella. Learn more about what HPE can do for SMBs by visiting vlcm.com/HPE. That's vlcm.com/HPE.
It seems like it really is an education process because, and this might be painting with too broad of a brush, but I don't get the impression that most seniors who are in this target audience, and even some of their caregivers who are probably still, you know, in their 60s and, you know, heading toward retirement or retired themselves and still taking care of parents, they're not reckless. It's not that they just, you know, don't care about being safe. It's that they limit their exposure to technology or limit their use of it because they don't feel safe. So it's not a matter of taking an attitude or a posture of recklessness and teaching them to be safe. It's no, you can learn how to do these things if you take these right safety precautions. Because, and I don't know that this will apply, maybe it is something that when you get to a certain age, you become less reckless. Maybe it's just something about that generation that they're a little more conservative in how they take on new things. But that has to be something that you factor in, right? That they're not reckless. They're just, they hold back because they have a posture of wanting to be safe and they don't feel safe.
Yeah. And in fact, it's a really good point you make because I share throughout the book and it's kind of weaved in there a little better understanding of somebody that's a senior. Typically, seniors are more trusting. They're going to be honest. They probably have a better work ethic than somebody younger. And I'm making very broad statements, but generally. They technically usually had to work hard and have a nest egg that they built up, so they have assets and tangible things and money in accounts and retirement, maybe because they went through the war or their parents did or whatever. So some of these things are ingrained in their personalities. So they tend to be that more trusting type of individual. Now think about it. What's a cyber criminal going to do? They're going to target those type of individuals. There's a certain net worth. They're trusting. They're innocent. Maybe they're not as quick with technology. Mm-hmm. And they're going to use those or leverage those to their advantage if they're launching a social engineering attack. If they're going to call on the phone, they're going to garnish little bits of information about the targeted individual so they could share those to build up trust, to build up that kind of innocence. And, you know, and a lot of times it's just with a simple phone call, a scam, and, you know, hey, how you doing there, Marty? I'm with the, you know, Bank XYZ fraud department, and I noticed that there's been suspicious activity on your account. I see that you're living at, you know, 11 Timber Drive, and I know the last four digits of your account are 1234, last four digits of your social security number are 8579, da, da, da. I just need to clarify a few more pieces of information for your security so I can make sure I stop these transactions before they take away $1,500 in your account. And the person at the other end of the phone is going, oh, no, they're going to take $1,500. Well, how could this have happened? And the credibility is already, you know, all those things are overcome, the objectives, because you heard things that you know are true. Yeah, that is the address I live at. Yeah, that is my social security number. They got my bank account. They said they're from the fraud department. They're calling me because they got suspicious activity alert. And then maybe they look at the caller ID and see a 1-800 number and they go on the website and not realizing that the caller ID, the number is actually spoofed. So all of these little tells would maybe flag myself or somebody else that's closer to the industry. But to somebody that's elderly or senior, they're thinking, I got to protect my, you know, my nest egg, or my grandkids are not going to inherit any money. I got to react now. They're not going to call anyone because maybe they're embarrassed or they feel pressured. There's a sense of urgency also that cyber criminals use to make you do this now or else you're going to lose all the money in your account. They're going to take the house away, whatever the case may be. So those little tells, I try to step them through the process of several different phone scams, email scams, in senior cyber, just to make them more aware. So they're a little more cyber savvy and question things. And I share tips too. Like if that type of dialogue was going on a phone call, the way I've handled it, and I do handle it, is I go, you know what? Thank you, Marty. This is really important. And I got to get you this information. Before I do anything else though, let me jot down your name, your phone number, and email in case we get disconnected. And guess what happens? The hacker suddenly hangs up. They move on to their next target. So little tricks you can do that and put the hacker or the potential hacker on the defense and make them think and make them try to react to really just sniff them out and see if it's actually real or not.
Yeah. Do you find through this process that maybe you started out by saying, I want to help seniors, and you've mentioned that their caregivers become sort of a secondary audience. Were you surprised at all to find that those caregivers, they may be better than their elderly parents at cybersecurity, but that doesn't mean they're good, right? Like I think of my parents and their friends, and they're not using password managers. And I know a lot of my friends don't use password managers. Mm-hmm. We're, you know, in our 40s. And so, I imagine that even that group is like a, not your target audience, but became a secondary audience, and they've benefited from the tips that you've shared with the seniors.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially when they're trying to share something with their, you know, aged parent, for example, and they realize, well, you know what? I reuse the same password across 10 different logins too. I guess I'm guilty. Maybe I should take some of this advice. So it's really nice because it starts the conversations. And I think it is important. I always find it very important. I'm taking care of my parents who are both senior and elderly and having their own health challenges right now. So every weekend, Friday night, Saturday, Sunday, I'm there completely helping them. I have a house next door to them up north in the lake community, which is nice, but it takes time and it opens up conversations when you talk about technology, when you talk about security. And I think that's important to keep the lines of communication open, because when something happens, you want them to call you. You want them to call for help or phone a friend, like that game show, right? That's important, because otherwise they're going to make a mistake. And I had that last week. My father called me. He goes, Scott, I got to talk to you right away. I got a text. I called him up. What's going on? He got a brand new Apple laptop, M1, frozen. I said, okay, stop. And he goes, well, it says on the screen to call this 1-800 number for Apple tech support, and they're going to do a remote takeover of the computer and help me through the problem. I'm like, no, it's a scam. They wouldn't do that. Here's who you have to call, and here's the steps you need to take. Yeah. And then later on, about 3 hours later, I talked to him. He goes, oh, I'm so glad you said that. I was going down this path thinking I'm doing the right thing, but just bouncing an idea off of you made me go a completely opposite path and found out it was somebody that hacked my computer and there was malware downloaded and it needed to be cleaned off and I did need to get some help. So those conversations I think are really important to have. And I think to some degree, the book is kind of facilitating that. And it's just raising awareness because most of cybersecurity, I personally believe, whether you're a senior, whether you're a caregiver, whether you're a teenager, whether you're a cybersecurity expert, it falls into things that you have control over because human nature, we're complacent, we're lazy. I could get up and tell you every time I speak and ask people, how many people reuse the same password across multiple login accounts? More than half the people still raise their hand. Can you believe that? I can't. I've been talking about this for years.
Yeah.
But people don't change their habits, and that's part of the problem. In fact, last week I was reading a data breach report that was put out, and they collected all the information from all the people's accounts that were compromised. Out of all the accounts, 76% of the people that had compromised information, personal information in that data breach, were reusing the same password across multiple platforms. And of course, most of the passwords were very weak. But what's that telling us? Once the password is compromised once, they're using tools that will go out and it'll test that password on every single, of the major websites to see if they could log in, go to all the banks, all the stock market, go to Facebook, go to LinkedIn. So until they could find the ones that they could hack in where people reuse the same passwords. It's effective. It works. It's automated. We don't realize that part of it. That's what makes this so easy to target and take over people's accounts and cause nothing but havoc and grief in their life. So we need to take basic steps and precautions to create stronger accounts using another layer of security mentioned earlier, multi-factor authentication. I share also in Senior Cyber another really simple tip that I think everybody should consider doing when you're given a security challenge question. Say it's your bank. What high school did you attend? Well, for me, I'm not going to answer honestly and say Edison High School. Why? Because anybody can go on Google, do a search, and see Scott attended Edison High School from this year to this year. Instead, I'm going to use it as an opportunity to put a unique password that only I know. It may be password 1234. Guess what? That's 100 times safer than putting an honest answer, Edison High School. Yeah. So I encourage people to lie when you're given chance to put in a security challenge question. Simple things like that do make a huge difference so we won't have our information compromised.
Yeah, really good tips all around and such an important topic. So the book is called Senior Cyber. And will you tell our audience where they can go find it? Because I'm guessing that everyone listening has someone in their life who they've had these discussions with or should have had these discussions with. And this might be a really good tool for them to go help their parents or whoever out that they might need to help out.
Yeah, absolutely. They could simply go on Amazon for Senior Cyber. Just type in Senior Cyber. It'll pop up. Or the other books too, Cybersecurity is Everybody's Business and Hacked Again. All three books are readily available on Amazon. And I think I do it in all the formats. It's soft cover, hard cover, ebook, as well as Audible if you'd like to listen to it instead of actually reading it. So whatever format works for you. The nice part again about Senior Cyber is big font, so you don't have to put your glasses on, which I love myself.
That's
my eyes are starting to go.
That's great. Scott, we really appreciate you taking the time to share your insight with our audience and look forward to taking a closer look at the books.
Great. Hey, thank you so much for having me on. And everybody out there, stay safe, please.
That'll do it for this episode. I want to thank our sponsors at Valcom. At Valcom, you get much more than a dedicated IT retailer. They become an extension of your IT team. Whether you're a startup or an enterprise, Valcom has the technical sales and engineering expertise to make your business more effective and more productive. Check them out at vlcm.com. That's vlcm.com. Special thanks as well to our supporting partners, the Utah Division of Technology Services, the Kem C. Gardner Policy Institute, the Utah Attorney General's Office, the Utah Department of Public Safety, and our friends at Secuvant. A reminder, you can follow us on Twitter at Cyber24_, or you can hit us up on Facebook as well. We want to hear from you in either place to let us know what you think, or if you have a topic you'd like to hear us discuss on a future episode. You can also rate and review the podcast on Apple Podcasts. We love those 5-star ratings. Thanks, everyone. Have a great week and stay safe online.